Well, you made a comment last night. You and I spoke briefly after the program last night with the Special Centennial Naval Aviation Recognition that you felt you'd had, you know, been in the right place at the right time, but had had a lot of opportunities. And by being prepared and having the skills, you were ready to take advantage of them. And I think that was a good message that you shared.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of people ask me, well, how did you get to where you are now, and how did it all work out for you? And I have to admit, a lot of it was just lucky timing. However, I will say that if I could give you some advice, and it would be to build yourself a very strong foundation of technical, math, science, your education. You still need your English and your language skills, because you need to be able to communicate. As a pilot, you have to communicate. Any career that you go to, you're going to need that. But specifically, if you're interested in aviation, you absolutely must have that strong math and science background. And if you build yourself that good base, when these opportunities come along that didn't even exist previously, then you're already poised to take advantage of those opportunities when they present themselves.
Thank you. Well, no, this is confusing with two Connies. I told her I was going to call her Harriet tonight. Obviously,
that'll be fine.
You mentioned your experiences flying the Blériot, and I know if we have time, you can talk a little bit about your experience flying the Wright Flyer. But maybe tell us a little bit about some of your experience airline, or maybe what interested you in pursuing that career.
Yes, if you think about what Harriet Quimby said, that she envisioned that someday we would fly these giant airplanes to the capitals of our distant world neighbors. As an airline pilot, I fly a heavy jet, over 500,000 pounds with 300 people on board, has 9 bathrooms. I've only been able to have the opportunity to use 7 of those, back and forth to Europe. And when I first wanted to fly was when I was a child, but I didn't make that decision until I was a young adult. And I was pedaling an off-the-rack 10-speed bicycle from California to Delaware, or the Pacific to the Atlantic Oceans. And somewhere in the middle of America, I stopped to take a drink of water, looked up at the sky, and saw a jet airliner gracefully flying across the sky. And I decided right then and there, when I finished the bicycle trip, I was going to go home and sell everything I had, which wasn't much, and I was going to be an airline pilot. I've been flying for 36 years, 29 of those for the airline. And I brought a little bit of a video clip, a little over a minute, for you to watch. But what I really, really want you to look at and read is the quote at the beginning and the quote at the end. The intermediate part is my joy in flying and all those wonderful opportunities that have come my way. Could we play the opening video clip, please?
That was a good one. Well, Connie, you have a lot of experience, obviously, with Warbirds of America, but tell us a little bit about some of the airplanes you fly for them, or maybe how you got started. How did you get introduced, I guess, to Warbirds? Or?
Well, that's a harder question than I would have thought, Peggy.
Sorry.
The Warbirds movement is something I became involved with because I flew the airplanes of that type, the T-6, the P-51. And once you come to Oshkosh, or once you become involved with the airplanes, you learn that it's more about the people than it is the airplanes. We as pilots loved the flying, but then what brings you in is that in the Warbirds, we're able to pay tribute to the veterans. We were able to preserve the airplanes. I flew the EAA's B-17 for many years. I also now fly the P-51 a lot. I'm several good friends. Obviously, they're good friends if you fly their P-51.
Right.
So I am. It's a lot in the timing, but once you are involved with EAA, and in my case, the Warbirds of America, and see the mission, and again paying the tribute to the veterans, we have a commemorative pin this year we're giving away to the veterans who come to our area. We have a new tribute Eagle Plaza with a brick program. It's dedicated to all who serve in the Warbird area, and that was purposely worded that way. It's for the military services. If you get a chance to come down to the Warbird area, we'll hope you come to see it, but it's also dedicated to the many dedicated volunteers at EAA. So my flying in the Warbirds, you just put an airplane out there and you say, yeah, I'll try that. And one thing, the Cub, you fly a tailwheel airplane, you go to the Cub, the T-6, the P-51, the DC-3, then you go to the B-17. So one just leads to another.
And you're being a little modest. I think you were the one who was responsible, or was one of the key people to introduce this tribute to the veterans during the Air Venture Week, as I've been told.
Well, I did have something to do with the improvements to our area there. Everyone worked very, very hard, and that's a true spirit of what we have happening. If you have not been to way on the north end, you need to come see all those airplanes. They're beautifully restored. The owners, restorers, they do a wonderful job. We have a program there. I should talk a little bit about the Warbirds in Review. We have a feature each day at 10, and then another one at 1, where we bring in a veteran with the aircraft. It's a wonderful opportunity to preserve the history in preserving the airplanes, but then to record those histories when the gentlemen or ladies come out and talk about the airplanes.
Well, now I have a really tough question for you. Which one is your favorite?
Well, I would have to quote my husband in that answer. It depends on what you're doing, but just for a nice afternoon to go enjoy a light flight, just something for the pure enjoyment, it's hard to beat a J3 Cub.
Oh, all right. All right. Great answer. I think we have a video clip. We'll try this again. Please play the Warbird video clip, please.
That looks like a 767 cockpit to me. Not to confuse you. I did retire from Delta on the 767.
Well, maybe we will, and maybe we won't. All right, well, maybe they get it ready. We'll come back to it later. But there's some beautiful photographs of you flying P-51s, and the B-17 was in there.
They can use their imagination or watch the beautiful airplanes during the Warbirds Air Show for the next couple of days. There are wonderful airplanes to fly. The P-51, while the Cub, it's hard to beat, the P-51 is everybody's dream. It is the Cadillac of the sky. It's not a T-38. I would I would take that if somebody give me the key.
All right, well, I guess we're not going to get the video clip, but if we get it later, we will show it. But Kay, I understand you brought some things too regarding your experiences in flight. Maybe tell us about the transition naval officer, and then how did you end up with the space program?
Certainly, as I said earlier, had the opportunity to fly in the Navy. After my operational tour of flying the oceanographic research, I actually became a Naval Flight Officer instructor and instructed for the Naval Flight Officers going to the P-3s and C-130s across the Navy. After that tour, I actually left the full-time active duty and joined the Navy Reserve, and I went to work at the Kennedy Space Center and became a space shuttle engineer and was working on the space shuttle. I went and picked up my master's degree and started applying to the astronaut program. And I actually was accepted to the astronaut program after working 6 years as a space shuttle engineer. and actually became the first employee from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, from that workforce, to ever be selected as a space shuttle astronaut. So reported to Houston, Texas in 1995 and started training at that time, and I was able to fly on board the Space Shuttle Columbia in 1998 and on board the Space Shuttle Endeavour last year in 2010.
Now, let me explain that a little more. I believe you... Yes. You had mentioned that you were the first employee at Kennedy Space Center, and that was because you said, I think they always were hiring just from the Johnson Space Center in the past, is that correct?
That's correct. When I was first went to the Kennedy Space Center, even in some of the interviews when I was being hired, people had looked at my my resume, my background, and said, hey, have you ever applied to be an astronaut? And I enjoyed space. I always wanted to fly in space. I certainly watched all the space missions when I was younger. Had never really thought that I had the capability to do that, because primarily it was all men, and even though at that time we did have women, I didn't think that I could do it. I thought you had to be a test pilot. Well, I was hired as a mission specialist astronaut, and again, my supervisors and my bosses told me, well, you know, if you really want to be an astronaut, you probably need to move to some other part of NASA, because we've never hired an astronaut from this employee workforce at the Kennedy Space Center. So I was very, very fortunate once again to have an opportunity come my way that had not been there before.
And I think you brought some footage from one of your space flights with us tonight?
I did. I have a video, if we can run that one. This one starts off with no sound. You'll recognize the NASA logo here. This is from my mission last year on the Space Shuttle Endeavour. This was STS-130. We had a crew of six, and we took up Node 3 and the cupola as part of the space station assembly. Now, this was about midnight in February of 2010. I'm the short one. Six of us went out to the launch pad to get on board Endeavour. 6 seconds prior to the actual launch, we light off the three main engines on the orbiter. If you look at that little inset, I'm kind of in the back on the left, the short one again. And this is right at launch. You see us all of a sudden start shaking there. And at 4:30 in the morning, we lit up the sky. The inset on the lower left is looking up towards where we're going. We're flying right towards a cloud deck, and you see us roll. So you see us roll there as we're getting ready to punch through that cloud deck. And we just lit up the entire sky. They said it looked like an atomic blast there as we lit up that whole cloud deck. But as soon as we punched through it, it was just black on the other side. We start off, obviously, right at the launch pad, just sitting there, and right at T0, everything lights off, including the solid rocket motors, and it takes us, after 2 minutes, those solid rocket boosters are spent, we no longer need them, and we jettison those, and they actually fall back into the Atlantic, and we continue under the power of the three space shuttle main engines. It takes us 8.5 minutes to get to space. And here we have a message.
To Naval and Marine Corps aviators around the world.
I'm Captain Kay Heyer.
And I'm Colonel George Zamka.
The Centennial of Naval Aviation celebrates a rich heritage of service, innovation, and excellence.
It's been a great 100 years from the International Space Station. Happy 100th birthday.